From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when workers for the city of Rochester took down the basketball rims at Cobbs Hill Park. And then they went to the other public courts, and kids watched, wondering when they'd be able to shoot hoops again outside. Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren is one of dozens of American mayors who have made similar calls. Take down the basketball rims to prevent pickup games and possible spread of the coronavirus. But what about parks in general? There is a growing national debate about what spaces should remain open and which should close. With the weather warming, more people want to get outside. And yet we've been hearing from listeners who are frustrated with runners or walkers or bikers in public parks. Not enough space, they tell us. Stay wide. Should parks close? Writing for the Washington Post, Harvard epidemiologist Mark Lipsitch argues that we need to keep the parks open. He writes, quote, "Regrettably, many public green spaces across the country have been closed. In most cases, there have been good reasons for the specific closings. Overcrowding with parking lots jammed, egregious disregard for proper social distancing and respect for others, and the prospect of drawing people from afar who would be better off spending time in nature closer to their front doors. But closing parks and public gardens should be a temporary last resort measure for disease control. The science could not be clearer. The benefits of getting outside vastly outweigh the risk of getting infected in a park," end quote. Writing for the Atlantic Monthly, techno-sociologist Zeynep Tufekci writes, quote, "Keep the parks open. The outdoors, exercise, sunshine, and fresh air are all good for people's immune systems and health and not so great for viruses. There is a compelling link between exercise and a strong immune system," end quote. So what should we expect here in Western New York as the earth thaws and more of us head outside? Our guests include the county executive from Monroe County, Adam Bella, who's on the line with us, one of the busiest men in our county. Thank you for making time, Adam. How are you?
Good afternoon, Evan. I'm doing great. How are you?
Very good, sir. Brighton Town Supervisor Bill Maley is on the line with us. Hi, Bill. Thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure, Evan. Great to be on.
Hello to Gay Mills, Executive Director of the Genesee Land Trust. Thanks for taking the time, Gay.
Thank you, Evan, for including me in the conversation.
You got it. And hello to Chris Clemens, who's the creator of the Exploring Upstate blog. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for including me.
Yeah. So let me start with Adam Bello. And, you know, let's just kind of take the wide lens here. What authority does the county have when it comes to some of these public spaces, and what have you been doing, Adam?
Well, the county obviously has its own park system,
yep.
And we have a number of parks, and so do the towns and the city of Rochester. And what we've decided to do is take a phased approach. Right now, you know, what I would like to do, and I thought it was interesting from a high-level view, some of the articles you just read from, about the benefits of keeping parks open, and my preference is to keep parks open. And on a broad view, what we're trying to do is work on education to keep make sure people understand the dangers of being too close together, the dangers of the virus spread, and then also to show what 6 feet apart looks like. So we have we've kept our parks open, but what we've kept them open for is passive recreation only. So we have closed playgrounds, shelters, things like of that nature. The dog parks, golf courses have remained closed. So activities that would draw people together, we've kept closed. But to keep the trail system open and the fields open and things like that, we think are important to allow people to go outside, get some space, get some exercise, and be out and just have that sense of freedom outside. But we're also aggressively using an education campaign with signage, and we're actually going to be, now that the weather has turned, putting some sidewalk markers in and some stenciling to show people what is 6 feet, how far away do you need to stay from each other in order to slow down the spread of the disease.
I'm looking at some of the early feedback already, Mr. Yeah. County Executive. Tim writes to say, boat launches, marinas, golf courses, all closed. Makes no sense. And Mark on Twitter says, tennis courts are closed. That's the perfect social distance sport. Again, I don't know where your purview comes in on boat launches, marinas, some golf courses, tennis courts. But let's try to kind of hit those one by one. Golf courses, why not golf courses?
Well, because again, you're gonna encourage people to come together. Even if you're in a foursome, you get people very close together. You have people together at clubhouses, and it's just it's just another avenue that encourages closeness and people being together.
Okay.
The same thing, you know, boat launches. Maybe being out on a boat may be a little different if you're out with just your family unit that you live with. But, you know, that's why, you know, that would be on an individual basis, something like that. So I think what you do is you have to look at it a little bit on an individual basis of what the activity is and what the general draw is. But you also have to look at what the maintenance activities of the staff would be to actually do that upkeep. So are you putting staff needlessly in harm's way or somehow compromising their health if they need to interact with the public to be able to open those kinds of activities?
Sure. I understand playgrounds and I understand basketball
sure.
courts, but the parks in general, can you give yep. us a sense, Adam, that our local parks that the county manages will not close unless X? I mean, could you foresee it even being possible that they might close?
Well, anything is possible. To date, though, I think that folks who are using our parks have been responsible in large part in maintaining social distancing because they recognize that the benefit of having those parks open relies on all of us following the rules and being responsible citizens. And so those who are using the parks are those who would like to see the parks continue to stay open. So I think that there has been a lot of cooperation and working together on that. You know, we are looking at, we do have our parks employees are out there over 12 different parks monitoring the parks, you know, opening and closing the gates and making sure that the trails are maintained so you can keep proper distance and things are as wide as they can be. And we'll just keep educating, and we're developing hotspots where we think that, you know, our staff is seeing more people congregate in different areas or different parks so that we can deploy more educational resources and things like that. So far, I don't have an indication of why those parks should close, but it's something that we have to continue to monitor as the weather gets nicer and more people go outside. But I will say that I think there's a direct relation between folks who are using our parks and are out there walking also want to see them continue to be open, so we're going to use them in a responsible way.
And one more for you before I turn to some of your colleagues here.
Sure.
Adam. And again, listeners, if you want to weigh in with questions or comments for the county executive and for our other guests this hour as we talk about how we handle outdoor life during a pandemic and how we handle parks and what's open and what's not, you can call the program or email the program and we'll take your comments. I already have a number of comments from people who are, frankly, upset with me that I didn't mention at the outset here something that I think is not directly related to parks, but it's the question of that Sunday night vigil. And what I don't want to do, Adam, is sort of draw a political fight out of anything, but I do want to be direct about this. So number one, what we know is that the mayor of Rochester, Lovely Warren, decided that with more than 100 and police estimating 200 people mourning at a vigil, that she decided that there would not be police directed to break it up, that they would be allowed to mourn that way, even though you had 100 or 200 people very, very close together on Sunday night. Governor Cuomo was asked to address that this morning during his news conference. He said he didn't have all the details, but he would say that we all need to learn the lesson of New Rochelle, which was one of the first hotspots in the state. He said that when you allow those kinds of gatherings, you can have an outbreak and a spike in cases anywhere. It can happen in any community, and we must learn the lessons of New Rochelle. So he made it more of a general comment there. And I would ask you for your thoughts, generally speaking, going forward as the county executive, what you do and don't want to see in regards to large gatherings, even for vigils.
Yeah, I think that what we need to do going forward is that we really do need to avoid large gatherings of people. It's just as the governor said, we need to learn the lessons of what we've seen in other parts of the country in other parts of the state. And I think the message has been pretty clear from all government officials at every level that we need to avoid large social gatherings because even if it's amongst young people, because as we know that younger people may not have the same fatality rate or outcome as it relates to COVID-19 as older populations, it can still spread, though, amongst younger people. And then we would then be vectors of carrying that disease into the more vulnerable populations. And that's really the problem here. It's really not about, you know, Evan, I assume you, me, most of the folks, probably most of the people listening to this program, if you were inflicted with COVID-19, would probably be fine. There's actually a number of people listening to this program who could have it and don't know it because their symptoms are so mild. but they are contagious. And if you were to spread that to our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, somebody with a compromised immune system, what you're really doing is you're contributing to a public health crisis. And I think what happened on Sunday demonstrates, though, that we do need to have more education about that and what the risks are, even to people who are young and healthy. We also need to work with our community to have safer, better outlets to be able to connect with each other. A lot of people are struggling. A lot of people are facing loss right now, and the folks we're gathering at the vigil are obviously facing a great loss. There's people across the country who have loved ones who are dying of COVID-19. They have loved ones who aren't, but are also losing loved ones and are trying to find ways to grieve, because we are social beings and we want to be with each other, but we need to come up with more creative outlets. And it's clear that we have more work to do in educating people about the dangers of the spread, even if you're healthy, otherwise healthy. And we also have more work to do in trying to come up with ways that we can connect socially and emotionally, but be able to do it in a safe way. So I think we still have some work to do on that, clearly, but the message is consistent and the same. We should not be having gatherings of people that can spread that disease. And I think the mayor would agree with that as well. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to second guess what happened in that instant, because I wasn't there and don't know how that started and played out. But I think that we have a lot of education to play out here in the future about keeping the spread low.
In the future, though, should police be directed to break up gatherings like that?
Well, police have been. We've worked with law enforcement over the last couple of weeks, and we have given law enforcement educational cards that they can all carry to be able to help spread that education and be able to help educate people so that they'll want to break up, and we need to get people separated. So we've been working with law enforcement to get that education component down so that they can be partners in this. But at the end of the day, we really do need the help and support of the community. This can't be a selfish individual endeavor. This really has to be the community understanding that by separating and not forming large gatherings, we're saving lives. And we just have to do that right now, so that when we come out of this on the other end, there's more of us and our families are safer because of it. So I know people want to get together. I know they want to have gatherings. We are all social beings. I look at my own, personal life myself. This past Sunday was Easter. This past Sunday was also my mom's birthday. And it was very difficult not going to church together, not being together for Easter brunch as we always do, and not being able to celebrate my mom's birthday the way we usually do. But we found other ways to do that. My children and I went to their house. We stood on the sidewalk. We talked. We drew pictures with sidewalk chalk on the driveway. We found other ways to have that engagement while still keeping that distance, so that my parents wouldn't be exposed to me or my children or have any undue risk there. So I think we just need to do more things like that. But we need the community's help. This has to be a community solution. And I also will say this, Evan, before we move on, we've been doing a very good job at this. I also want to say I want to thank people for that. Mm-hmm. We keep talking about our curves here in Monroe County. Are we on a linear polynomial? Are we on an exponential curve? And so far, we've stayed off of the exponential curve. That worst-case scenario has not materialized yet because of the social distancing that we're doing. And so when you go look back, the what you do today will impact health outcomes 2 or 3 weeks out. So when we closed schools down 3 weeks ago, when we started doing all these social distancing techniques and campaigns out there, we were able to get in front of that exponential curve to keep us on more of a linear and polynomial curve, so that we're still growing, but it's not overwhelming the healthcare system. So what we're doing is working. I'm just afraid that some fatigue will set in, and we need to fight that fatigue, and we need to just keep, now's the time, as Dr. Fauci says, to put our foot on the gas pedal. It's not time to let up. We need to keep going.
Amen. You don't stop brushing your teeth just because you don't have cavities.
Well, that's a good point.
Absolutely. Amen. And I think that we've seen a lot of great leadership locally. We've got Brighton Town Supervisor Bill Maley with us. Bill, in your community, What's the decision on parks and what ought to be happening?
Well, I agree with so much of what Adam said. It is certainly our plan to keep our parks open. We have also closed all of our lodges, all of our playgrounds, our basketball and our tennis courts. You asked about tennis. I grew up as a tennis player and as a basketball player. Every time you hit the ball, you know, at the end of the point, you pick up the ball. And so if you're playing singles, if you're playing doubles, you hit the ball into the other court. Lots of people are touching that ball. The people may not come into contact with each other, but you are still indirectly contacting and potentially transmitting the virus. So we had to look at all of those. And we've kept all of our parks open. What we have done, though, at one park, our Corbett's Glen Nature Park, which has a different feel to it. The trails through Corbett's Glen are not multimodal, wide, 10, 11-foot trails the way several of our other parks are. We've always had limited parking in the area, frankly, because we wanted to keep Corbett's Glen as a low-intensity, very passive nature park. But all of those factors made concern for us as Corbett's Glen, even in normal times, can be challenging with the number of people that want to use it. It's a beautiful place. In a time of COVID-19, in a time where social distancing is so very important, all of those cars parked in close proximity not only were creating a pedestrian and traffic hazard, but having that many people in the park made it nearly impossible on narrow trails to properly maintain social distancing. So we made the decision to close the one public parking lot that serves Corbett's Glen, but also to prohibit parking on a number of streets that are nearby Corbett's Glen and that we've known over the years have been places where people have parked when the parking lot is full. We don't want to close the park. I couldn't agree more that that parks are so important, not only the physical health, but mental health. I live close to one of our trailheads, our Brickyard Trailhead on Elmwood Avenue. I see people coming and going. I use that trail almost every day myself. I start almost every day on that trail. I see how people are enjoying it. But that's an 11-foot wide trail. Most people walk to that trail. So that's a trail and a park, like many of our other parks, that are well-suited to enjoyment and usage, but still maintaining distancing.
Bill, what about what we're seeing in some other cities across the country, which is that they're actually closing in certain sections of cities streets for the time being, allowing more foot traffic on streets, closing them to car traffic? Could we see anything like that here?
Well, you know, in towns, our street and highway system is sort of a polyglot of county, state, and town streets. The main arterial roads, the Elmwood Avenues, the Winton Road, the Monroe Avenue, those are either state, in the case of Monroe, or Winton and Elmwood are county roads. So we don't have decision-making authority over those streets, although they are certainly major arterial roads. The other streets, I mean, frankly, in many cases, you see people walk in the street anyway to a certain extent. In a community like Brighton, many of our neighborhoods have well-developed sidewalk systems, and it's very safe and easy to walk on sidewalks, and even though those sidewalks are not really wide enough, people are good about moving onto the, out of the way when they see someone coming. But if people are going to be using the streets, it's one more reason, quite frankly, why it's so important for drivers to be vigilant now more than ever to maintain the speed limit. What we don't want to see, and frankly what I see a little bit too much of, is people taking advantage of the fact that there is much less traffic on many of our streets today, so they're going faster. And that's absolutely the wrong approach. We want to make sure, and our police are out there, they're enforcing speed limits. So we want to make sure people drive safely so that the many people that are out walking and riding their bikes can do that safely as well.
Okay. And briefly, County Executive Bello, you have any sense that we could actually see, and again, I take Bill's point. I mean, there's a lot of different jurisdictions. Any idea that we could see streets or sections close in any parts of our county and just make them sort of foot traffic, not car traffic?
It's an interesting idea that we could explore if that becomes necessary. I think that's interesting because you want to make sure you have that ability for people to be outside. But what I will say is this, is to expand on what the supervisor just said, I have noticed an incredible change in the way that people walk about neighborhoods. And I know you're always going to have, you know, folks who, you know, don't follow this, and you'll have, you know, individual examples, but at least, you know, like in my neighborhood and in neighborhoods around where, you know, my folks live and things like that, people naturally are starting to do that separation on the sidewalks. You know, a sidewalk is a good 4 or 5 feet, I think, wide. I think they're 5 feet wide. As long as people, when you start coming across each other, naturally start to distance from each other. Or someone may walk towards the road if it's safe to do so, to provide that space. So I think people are really starting to starting to understand this and are cooperating and participating in good social distancing. So I've been very happy to see that when at least I'm out and around. We mm-hmm. take the dog for a walk every day, and I can see that people are making a conscious effort to be safe.
All right. Gay Mills, Executive Director of the Genesee Land Trust. What's the organization's position on what's going on with the pandemic?
Well, we're a local non-for-profit, and we have preserved natural and working lands, and we currently have about 15 preserves open to the public, in addition to several partnerships we've done with towns, including Corbett's Glen, and we rely on the supervisor there. Good job, Bill, to be trying to maintain safety for everyone who's visiting. Including Gosnell Big Woods in the town of Webster, which is also a very popular destination. Sometimes it's you just relying on individuals who are going to these places to use their common sense, pay attention to the 6-foot saves message that's been coming out. One of the things that I think about sometimes is that individuals might sometimes have a hard time visualizing how far 6 feet is from each other. And I know someone commented, well, it's not as tall as Bill Maley, but
it's a full Maley. Yeah.
but Bill is always standing up. I don't ever see him lying down on the ground to tell me how far away that is. So I was saying, well, it's as far apart is the wingspan of a great blue heron, but most people don't have a sense of how far that is. But it's the width of a car, or it's the, you know, the length of a bicycle or something like that, to give people really a sense of how far away that is. And that many of our preserves, like Corbett's Glen, might have a really nice open section of trail and then have a narrow section. And so people, you know, we're encouraging people to enjoy those places, but to really be thoughtful of each other
mm-hmm.
And to take safety precautions.
Well, I will just say it was a WXXI colleague of ours, Scott Feibusch, who launched the full Maley campaign. And Bill Maley, because how tall are you, Bill? You're just under 7 feet.
I'm 6'8".
6'8". Okay. Bill could dunk a basketball when he was 9 years old. And and here at WXXI, there's not many people left in the building, and we've done a phenomenal job. If anybody starts to even get any too close to anybody, you will hear someone invoke the phrase, full Maley, please.
Well, so, I do, Evan. I want to give real kudos to Scott and his wife, Lisa. You know, they came up with the sign as really an internet meme, and it took off. I mean, I don't want to say it went viral, but
yeah,
it really became incredibly popular. So they went with it, and they made up the signs, sold them with the net proceeds going to the Brighton Food Cupboard. And yeah, it's funny, but sometimes you got to make serious subjects humorous, And people stop me all the time. They tell me they love the signs. I tell them they're not mine. They're Scott and Lisa, but that they did a great, great job. And they are a reminder. All throughout the town of Brighton, the signs say, keep a full Maley's distance apart. And I think it's working. And I think the work that the county executive is doing, the signs that they're putting up, I do. I think there are lots of ways that we need to educate, and every community is different in that way. But it has made a difference. The statistics are clear. And if we laugh a little bit while we're doing it, so much the better.
Well, let me bring in Chris Clemens, who is one of the most experienced explorers of our entire state. He created the Exploring Upstate blog. Chris, when you think about all the changes we're having to make right now, and you're hearing from our elected leaders, what are the changes you think are the right ones for them to make, and what are the ones that you know you're worried about?
I guess the thing that are more worrisome for me are some of the chatter that I've seen on social media platforms where people are kind of saying, like, you know, my freedoms are being taken away. And, you know, they're just doing this because they purposely want to destroy my nest egg and things like that. And I think that's more worrisome than the heavy hand of the government. One of the first points that article in The Atlantic brought up was the fact that an authoritarian decision to close down parks is probably a bad thing. And I don't typically show my political hand publicly, but typically I'm not a fan of the government getting involved in stuff like that. But when we've proven that when left to our own devices, we don't always make great decisions when it comes to public health. So I'm okay with a little bit of authoritarian rule right now when the government is saying, hey, we recognize that this sucks. No one likes it. Really sorry. We're going to get through this. Just give us a little bit of time while we figure it out. So I think those are the things that worry me the most. That being said, I do like the fact, and everyone who's spoken so far has already covered this, I like the fact that we are still keeping parks open. I haven't heard this term before today, but Adam mentioned passive recreation. Mm-hmm. I like that concept. I don't think right now is the time for us to be putting kids on jungle gyms mm-hmm. and you know, touching all kinds of things that other people are going to be touching. But if I'm in a park area with my feet on the ground and my hands in my pockets walking through open air, I think there's only good can come of that.
Yeah, it's Dr. Scott McRae writes to us to say, tennis balls, frisbees, and outdoor exercise bars that are shared are basically like direct hand-to-hand contact and can spread the virus. So listeners, if you've been right. asking us about tennis courts and certain activities that have been shut down, that's the reason right there. But they ultimately, I think there's a pretty uniform opinion that parks are going to stay open unless we truly can handle it. And Chris, when you've been outside, are you sensing that people are taking this more serious now, creating a little bit more space for one another?
A little bit. So I was the most recent walk that I went on was at Tryon Park, which is a Monroe County park here in the city. It's walking distance to my house, actually, in North Winton Village. What's interesting is I think all of these parks are seeing much more foot traffic, no pun intended,
yep.
than we were a long time ago. I think people are looking to do things, looking to do new things, creative things, like have already been mentioned on this show. So these parks are seeing more people than we're used to. So one of the things that comes with that, I think, is people not realizing how to be in a park and what's important to do when you're in a park. So I think there's general guidelines and practices that people might not know what those general practices are. So if you're on a trail that's not 6 foot wide and you have a mountain bike coming at you on Tryon Park, you jump off the trail and trample the ground cover and the underbrush. Is that what you're supposed to do? Because if that's the case, all of this additional foot traffic has the potential to have a negative impact on the ecological systems in these parks that we're enjoying.
Yeah, it's kind of a hard call. Let me just, before I take some feedback from listeners for all of our guests here, let me just read a little bit more from Harvard's Mark Lipsitch on how to change our behavior while keeping parks open. He writes, quote, in the Washington Post, quote, there are simple strategies you can take to head outside with confidence. First and foremost, yes, maintain physical distancing, at least 6 feet away from others the majority of the time. But walking past someone should not induce fear or panic. These short walk-bys are low risk for transmission of the coronavirus. Everyone in community green space, cyclists, runners, and pedestrians should wear a facial covering. Even a homemade cloth mask can help prevent infecting others, which can happen if you have the virus with no symptoms. Perhaps equally important, wearing a facial covering is a clear social signal that you take your community role seriously. That simple courtesy can help others relax when outdoors together in a common space. And he goes on to say this about what a lot of people were talking about, this piece in Medium that highlighted kind of this unreviewed study out of Belgium that found runners and bicyclists are aerosolizing germs, not necessarily the coronavirus, but maybe, and spreading them much farther than 6 feet. Here's what Lipsitch says about that. Quote, if you're a runner, be mindful that you eject more aerosols while exercising due to heavy breathing and exertion, with most of it trailing behind you. So give others a larger buffer than 6 feet as you approach or pass. If you're running with others, the best way to do this is to run side by side, separated by at least 6 feet. If you're behind another runner, give yourself more than 6 feet and stagger your alignment so you're not directly behind their plume. Outdoors, the virus quickly disperses in the air, so others should not be anxious if a runner goes by, even if they pass within 6 feet. Such fleeting exposure, especially if you and the runner are wearing masks, is low risk. End quote. So that's Mark Lipsitch from Harvard, just explaining that we need more study on running and biking, but just give a little, give even more than a full melee. Give a double melee. If you give a double melee, then maybe we're in an even better spot. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we're going to get your feedback for all of our guests as we keep the parks open here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, Rochester School Superintendent Terry Day joins us. You might have heard recently a conversation with members of the Rochester City School Board about possible cuts and the superintendent's budget. This hour on Wednesday, Terry Dade will join us to talk about where he stands on what cuts to make, what to expect from New York State and the federal government, and more. Join the conversation Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get Stephen in Pittsford on the phone. Go ahead, Stephen.
Hi, thanks, Evan. Thanks for taking my call, and hi to Gay. Okay, so I'm a longtime park user, and in another lifetime actually worked as a naturalist at Mendon Ponds when they had such a thing. So I know the parks really well, and since this has started, there's been a huge increase, as people have noted, and I don't know how much, but I'm seeing, I don't know, two times, five times, way more people consistently in the parks, all ages, families, singles, you name it, and on trails where I've never seen them. So way more park use. So I'm glad that Monroe County is doing an education campaign, but I have to say that I haven't seen it. At least in Mendon and Powder Mills, I haven't seen one sign about social distancing, contrasting with Genesee Land Trust properties, which I see it right away, and even Town of Victor's had them up for weeks. So that's one point. If you're going to do it, let's do it. Let's get it out. The other point I find is even more critical, I think, longer term, with all this use and people stepping off trails like somebody mentioned, this is the time when ticks are abundant, the deer ticks. I came back from Powder Mills a few days ago with 8 ticks on me, and there's no signage, essentially. They're carrying, as we know, Lyme disease, babesiosis, anaplasmosis. There should be signage at every parking lot in every park in Monroe County. Many of the state parks have this. Land trust properties have this. Why don't Monroe County parks? I wrote to Adam and the county health commissioner a couple of weeks ago and haven't heard back. This is, I mean, with all the extra people, people should be aware. Most people have no clue about the ticks, and they're tiny. But they're there, and they're abundant.
Yeah,
so those are Those are my points.
Stephen, thank you. It was a year ago this week. My boy and I were in Turning Point Park, and I pulled a tick off his head. You're right. They're everywhere. So that's certainly something that everyone should keep in mind. And now let me turn to County Executive Adam Bello, and he can respond to some of Stephen's comments about signage and taking safety seriously in parks. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, Stephen, I appreciate that, and I think you're right about the safety around ticks as well. We're seeing that at my home. I've pulled ticks off my dog over the last couple of weeks, and I've seen that. So I think that's a good idea, and we can certainly put up more signage to that. And we're doing the best we can on signing the parks. I do know even just this afternoon we've picked up an additional 1,000 signs. We're doing 500 more signs are going up at county parks, so you'll start to feel that impact more. And I know we're giving 500 signs, I believe, to the city of Rochester for parks as well. So we're increasing that. The other interesting campaign that we're undertaking with our partners at Napier's and at CauseWave is this signage related to stenciling at the park. So we'll be going to places like Highland Park where we've had some higher foot traffic now that the weather's a little nicer, and we'll be stenciling these images 6 feet apart on the ground, so you can start to have that better sense of what is 6 foot separation, because sometimes that's hard to judge that difference. So as the weather gets nicer, you'll see more and more of that coming out. But to Stephen's point too, the parks are being used a lot more than they used to be. I think that's 100% right, because you know, being safe at home means that you also need to get out before you know that cabin fever sets in. So we encourage people to go out and go for walks. My dog has never been on more walks in his life than he has in the last 3 or 4 weeks, because we need to get out. We need to have that fresh sunlight and oxygen. But we'll do the best we can to get those signage up. But I think that tick signage is actually a great idea as well. So that's a good one.
To follow on to the amount of usage. The discussion about social distancing and the grade that Monroe County gets. We started as an A, went down to a C, but if you drill down into the numbers, we're actually doing very, very well on all the statistics they used, and these are generated by cell phone monitoring. But the one statistic that took us down to a C level is the level of usage of parks, and that the graders saw as a negative thing. Park usage based on that cell phone monitoring in Monroe County was up 115% in the last statistic I saw. And yes, if parks are not being used well, that can be a problem. But I think, as we've all said today, it's a good thing that parks are being used. They're a great outlet. And as long as people are careful, as long as people do go in with the kind of education, and certainly ticks and other, you know, potential hazards are it's important that people know about them. But I really do think that we can be compatible, social distancing and park use, and we will all be better off.
Mm-hmm. Let me read some more feedback from listeners. CT says, I'm a member of the Village of Brockport's Parks Committee. We've kept the parks open, but we've closed all of the playgrounds due to the fact that the virus can, per the CDC, live on plastic and other hard surfaces for a couple of days. We've also closed basketball, tennis, and pickleball courts. It was sad to do it, but it was the right thing to do. That comes from CT. Amy writes to say the following. Amy says, what I'm seeing while I run is people making room on the sidewalks, runners giving a wide berth, but casual bicyclists not using the street as they should. They're clogging the sidewalks for true pedestrians. With more of us not walking as the weather gets nicer, it's critical that bicyclists follow traffic laws. That's from Amy. And I mean, Adam, I'd say that's right. I mean, you know, this is a time where we've got to give each other space, and not a time for bicycles on the sidewalks. Fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair. We should use our common sense about that. And yes, so people should learn the rules of the road, use the road. I know there is going to be some anxiety around children, though. You know, I have a 9 and a 10-year-old. We will ride on the sidewalk until we see someone coming, and then we safely move on to the street to give people room. So, but we should be using our streets in a responsible way and giving people space.
Okay. Bill Maley, you want to add to that?
No, I agree. I mean, Elmwood Avenue, for example, is a very tough street for any biker, avid or otherwise. But yes, in neighborhoods, obviously, people should, wherever possible, if they're going to ride their bikes, do so along the street, riding with traffic, as always.
And I would just let listeners know, in preparing for this program, it's interesting the creative ideas that are happening in different places around the country. I mean, in certain public spaces and in other states, some of the trails that you see are constructed in a way that kind of loops. And that obviously that's not everywhere, but in places where that's really available, some municipalities or some local governments have decided we're going to make traffic on this trail one way and make it a loop. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're not passing people going both ways. And, you know, that's obviously designed to give as much space as possible. We don't always have a trail system that allows that. But I do know that whether it's the county executive and local leaders, everyone is thinking about ways to make sure we can do this safely because we're going to go outside one way or another. I mean, that's the thing, Adam Bello. And as Zeynep Tufekci writes for The Atlantic, here she kind of addressed the fact that you can't keep people inside anyway. She writes, quote, closing some parks may well cause what outdoor access remains to become even more crowded. People have already been reporting crowding elsewhere as a response to park closures. And that might avoid the pictures from parks that get people upset and encourage scolding, but it doesn't actually make people safer because now more people are confined to fewer public spaces. Do you agree with that, Adam, that ultimately, right now, at least, if you close the parks, people would want to go outside are going to go outside. They're just going to have fewer options?
People are going to go outside because the weather's nice, and they need to go outside. And there's an unintended consequence, too, of people being in their homes for hours and hours without the ability to go outside. There's that emotional and psychological impact of being, you know, I always hate this term saying stuck at home because you're safe at home. Mm-hmm. But being in your home all day is going to have an impact on you as well, on your mental well-being. And so we do need to have the ability to go outside. But what I'd also say is we also need to encourage some common sense because you do have probably more people out riding their bikes around the streets than you normally would have. I remember kids are out from school right now. A lot of folks are working from home and need to get outside, and you're outside. More people are clearly using the parks and have used them before. When you see somebody doing something that's not necessarily appropriate, so you step off a trail and maybe, you know, disrupt something, or you're riding your bike on a sidewalk, should be on the road, we also just have to be good neighbors about things. Maybe people aren't intentionally misusing the sidewalks or the roads or not intentionally misusing the parks. They just need to be more educated. And so I think that's on all of us in programs like yours and on us public officials and everybody else who's on this program who enjoy parks and manage parks is to be able to educate folks on how best to use them and best practices. But I think we all need to be kind and really do use some common sense while we're out there.
All right, let me get back to phone calls. This is Mike in Rochester. Hi, Mike, go ahead.
Hi, Adam and guests. Adam, this is a question directly for you.
Sure.
Evan asked you directly whether or not you agreed with Lovely Warren, what she did the other day with the shooting on Clifford Ave. Now, I am a city resident, and I go out on occasion because I have to go to the store on occasion. And so I drive around the city, and I do see clusters of people together, okay, but they shouldn't. My TV, I see across the bottom, they say, when you see crowds of people together, call 911. Now, he asked you a question whether or not you agreed with Lovely Warren to allow these people to cluster together or not. I don't think that was appropriate. I didn't think you answered that question directly. I realize most people are social distancing, but I, being a city resident, and I drive through certain neighborhoods, and I see clusters of people, and so now when I see them, I am going to call 911. But you didn't answer the question about what did you think.
All right, Mike. Okay, I got it. Go ahead, Adam Bello.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. And I said I do not think that I think clusters of people being together is not appropriate, and that we should be educating people and trying to disperse folks as we can. And I don't think this is just a problem within the city of Rochester, though. I was just watching the news yesterday and saw a gathering on TV that wasn't this situation of the vigil that didn't really seem to get a lot of attention of people not social distancing. I see it in a lot of different places. And I think that the problem that we have is that there's a sense amongst young people that that because this more adversely affects older residents and people who are sick, there's a sense amongst young people that that they're immune to this, or that it's not a big deal. If they get coronavirus, it's not a big deal. I'll have a cough and I'll move on. And the problem is we need to make sure people understand that that's not the extent of it. That's a selfish view. That if you catch coronavirus and you're walking around with it, you could spread it to other folks who it could have a much larger impact. So I think I was very clear. I do not think there should be gatherings of large numbers of people like that because it aids in the spread of the disease. And I think that, we need to do a better job. We need to do a better job educating, though, because I think there is a misperception or a misconception in the community that even though we're young people, we're healthy people getting together and spreading, the disease is not a big deal. It is a big deal for those who could have a much more negative impact.
All right. So, and let me also just say, Mike, I mean, I wouldn't have moved on if I thought Adam dodged a question. The hard part for that moment for Mayor Lovely Warren or for anybody is once that gathering's already started, if you've got 200 emotional people mourning, a tragedy, and you're going to tell police, drag them apart, you could actually see more violence or more, sort of volatility in that moment. Just as in New York City and in other places, we've seen, and I think, and I'm going to be very careful here and I'll correct it if I'm wrong, I think the Orthodox Jewish community has defied some of the urgings of public leaders and have gathered for either religious events or mourning, et cetera, exactly as we saw Sunday night. A lot more people freaked out about Sunday night than they did about what we're seeing in Orthodox Jewish communities. But it is happening. It's not what's recommended by leaders. There has to be education in advance. But in that moment, if you send police in when there's 200 people, I'm not sure what the outcome could be, and it may not be safe. So I actually think the mayor's in a hard spot in that moment. Now, you could argue you got to do a better job educating in advance, and I think that's exactly one of the reasons that people like County Executive Bello are on this program, or the mayor's doing a town hall this week with other leaders. There's a lot of that effort going on here. But, I mean, Adam, I think you answered the question. I wouldn't let you off the hook. You don't come on this program to off the hook. It's a hard spot, but I think we're also it's clear that it's not right now. It's not a good situation to see gatherings, and that's a lot of hard work. All right, so before we lose the hour, let me ask all of our guests to kind of weigh in on this here. We could be in this position for a while. We could see sort of a start and stop. We could see sort of a half open and then sort of a reset if there's setbacks. There's a lot we don't know. Chris Clemens is someone who's an enthusiast for this state and everything it has to offer. What do you think the best case scenario is given what elected leaders are trying to do right now?
I think best case is over the next couple months, we slowly start to open up some of the parts of the economy that we were using before the shutdown. I don't think there's going to be a day when just suddenly everyone is able to walk out of their house and into restaurants the way that we did 2 months ago. I think this is going to be a long effort back to normalcy.
Okay. Gay, what do you think is the sort of the best case scenario as we figure out how to use, especially public spaces, but use it appropriately?
Well, I guess I was thinking that we're blessed with the tremendous county parks and town parks, but there are lots of more hidden gems that if people are finding that their favorite places are busy, they should be searching on local land trust websites, on the blogs and others of finding those places that aren't quite so crowded and that you might be able to have a wonderful time outside without being part of a crowd.
Okay, fair enough. And as I
was saying, GenesseeLandTrust.org is our website if you'd like to head out there to see where our parcels are.
All right, GenesseeLandTrust.org. I was just thinking, too, somebody listening right now will know the answer to this question. And I'm really asking on behalf of my son. Geocaching enthusiasts, is this a time not to geocache? Should you find the caches but not touch them? Can you handle them with gloves? Can you disinfect? Because he loves geocaching and to talk about hidden gems. That's great fun, but we're trying to do that appropriately. Somebody's already figured this out, and someone will email me, edawson@wxxi.org, and my son and I will be set straight on that. All right, Bill Maley, as we look ahead, what do you think the best case scenario is as we figure out public space usage?
Well, I'm certainly very data driven, and I think we're going to have to look at data. And the national conversation is already beginning to evolve. So some really tough questions about privacy and data that I think are going to be part of the new normal, as people call it. I also think people themselves are going to be making these decisions. You know, we as leaders, we don't have all the answers. We certainly don't have total control. And I think we can open up activities, but the people are going to have to decide as well whether they feel comfortable. You know, there's talk about major league sports and big college sports and other outdoor activities. They may have games. I don't know. I'll be very interested to see whether people come, whether it's restaurants, whether it's movie theaters, and certainly parks. I think we have seen, the people have already said, people are comfortable. People really want to be in parks, and I think that's indicative of a very good trend for the future.
All right, 30 seconds, Adam Bello. Go ahead.
Well, I'll echo something Chris said too earlier, which is that, you know, I think what you're going to see is it's almost like a phased-in approach when things start to open again in the coming weeks, and you're going to see changes in the way we do things and the way things are cleaned and sanitized, and when it comes to how many people are allowed in a space at a time and what the maximum capacities are, things like that. And it's also going to be driven by our availability of testing, whether it's COVID-19 testing or antibody testing. But right now we've done a good job in social distancing, keeping things a little flattened, but we can't let up too early or else it'll spike like we've seen in other places around the world.
Well, I will say you should follow the county executive, Adam Bello, on social media, because you will see how to make your own facial covering at home, which he did, and you will also see that his wife does an amazing job cutting hair.
Yeah,
so,
who knew?
Looking good, Mr. County Executive.
I got very lucky in that department.
Oh,
she's a very talented woman. Yep.
Hey. Adam, I know you're busy. Thanks for making time. I know we'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Bill Maley, Supervisor of the Town of Brighton. Same. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks very much, Evan. And I know I'll be on a conference call with Adam shortly.
Gay Mills, Executive Director of the Genesee Land Trust. Thanks for what you do, Gay.
Thank you, Evan, for inviting me.
You got it. And Chris Clemens from Exploring Upstate. Thank you, Chris.
Hey, thank you.
You got it. Thanks to Megan Mack, Rob Braden. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.